Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Dead Star says, hello, good people of the JFG universe. And New Guy says, we are a small but evolving universe that will not suffer from phenotypic revolutions. Yeah, who knows? You know, we may be a part of a small club at some point, DNA-based being. Maybe at some point in time, the JFG community and their descendants. I didn't know that these worms, oh my God, these worms, they are 2 meters long. They live under the sand, and you have to attract them with a piece of dead fish. Look at how he gets these worms to come out. So what we see is the kind of head of the worm. The worm has no eyes. He's just detecting that there is flesh to eat, and he goes up. Whoa! What the fuck? Takes with a forceps. My God. That is disgusting. Wah! 2 meters long. Ugh. Disgusting. Yesterday was the debate, and I'm going to review. I'm going to review some segments and give my thoughts on the debate. I think that Ramaswamy performed extremely well, as I expected. I predicted it just before the debate. I said everyone will want to focus fire on him, because he's not dangerous, so it's not like drawing attention to him is keeping others from winning. He's probably not going to be the next president, you know, no matter how it happens. Even if he was to be the best among the alternatives, he would still have to fight Trump and probably wouldn't win against Trump. So they all focused fire on him. And he was drawing a lot of attention, a lot of fire toward him. And that's what you want to do when you're a third runner and he's getting ahead of DeSantis. You know, he's been getting tied with DeSantis or close to tie in the survey. Look, he was the only person who seems like cognitively there in the debate. I know what the others are going to say. But I had the impression, here's a human being who's hilariously, you know, he's the Indian, and he gets called by Chris Christie, someone who talks like ChatGPT. And it's true that there is a Ramaswamy kind of automatic delivery aspect to his speech, not in a robotic way, but in a very enthusiastic, very warm way of speaking. People were saying that he's had courses in theater, so that's probably where he got this kind of eccentric expression. But he totally won and totally succeeded at getting hated, basically, by all of the other candidates, by being the candidate that was there and that was anti-system in his own way. You know, I'm not saying that he's our savior. I've seen some clips about him that I will show. There are things that are worrying about Ramaswamy. He's kind of a Democrat, libertarian. And, you know, there's a problem with this kind of libertarian, statist, leftist. It will come at many problems from a liberal point of view rather than a right-wing or traditionalist point of view. But some of the slogans that he had, it's amazing that we can't hear this from the other politicians. It's amazing that he's the only one clearly saying open border is wrong. The family is headed by parents and not by teachers. It's amazing that we have to beg to just get this. This should be a given for any right-wing candidate in the U.S. But no, it's like... And a lot of the things that he says about climate change hoaxes, he doesn't call it the climate change hoax. He says the climate agenda is a hoax. So he leaves himself a little bit of space there. when you say the climate agenda is a hoax, you can easily come back later and say, well, I'm talking about the human politics around it. I'm not saying that it's not warming up, but the human politics around it are a hoax. That is interesting. Very anti-war. Out of all the candidates that were talking about sending money to Ukraine, supporting Ukraine, here's a candidate who was like withdrawing of Ukraine and let's bring back all of our military presence in the world. But I don't know that he said the world, but he basically implied that we should that the American army should be mostly in America and not out there meddling in the affairs of the world. Now, there was an interesting exchange with Nikki Haley on Israel, and this led to a meme that people have shown, and it's two Indians, because they're both Indian, two Indians arguing for how much money we should send to Israel, because Nikki Haley was like, I love Israel, and Ramaswamy was like, I really love Israel. But Ramaswamy was able to say, I really love Israel, but then connect to a semi-based point of the right, which is, you know, the way we usually do in right-wing speech when we have to praise Israel is that I really love Israel. You know, I love their policies around LGBT activism, and I love their policy against immigration, or I love their sense of nationalism and their rejection of demographic change, or I love their racial unity around the Jewish religion. Those are kind of semi-based way to say I love Israel, but at the same time to call out the double standard, which is that that Jews, when they are in a nation that they control, they allow themselves all these protections, including walls. And when they find themselves in other nation, they argue for open borders. So that's a little bit what Ramaswamy has been doing in this exchange. So I wish that we wouldn't have to have everyone on stage in a normie debate like this. I wish that there would be an option of someone who doesn't say or doesn't have to say, I love Israel. But the way he did it was the only acceptable way. Mark D's channel says, Vivek is the Israel-supporting white supremacist we deserve, not the one we need, or something. You can see it a little bit like this. He is not the ideal white supremacist. But you know, when you're down, you can take options that are imperfect. Deadstar sends a super chat. He says, JF, can you explain to me how school choice vouchers aren't just civil rights era busing 2.0? To me, the vouchers seem like a quick way to diversify white suburban schools with inner city kids. In turn, I think this only prices more of the white middle class out of a good education. Well, in certain circumstances, a political program, a specific political program implementing that option could be used for what you describe. It could be used to make all schools more accessible and therefore diversify, and therefore the natural barriers that are keeping races still segregated in America as of today could be destroyed and lowered. If we were in front of a specific political program, I could tell you, will this do this or not? The question will be simple. Is this program designed in a way that it brings poor kids into richer neighborhood schools? And if so, then that is a program of racial mixing, and you'd be totally right. Now, the reason I agree with school vouchers in principle is that I think there is something very good to be done with school vouchers that is not this. I think that with school vouchers, you could implement an opt-out from the system of education. Because the problem is education becomes an increasing cost for any nation that goes onto this Canadian direction. you know, of offering education to everyone and encouraging education and giving it away by the state. So if the US takes the direction of Canada anyways, and becomes a socialist country, which it seems to be doing, the school vouchers will not change the integration of diversity in the different neighborhoods of America, because you're headed there no matter what. You're going to have other things to keep yourself away from diversity. So this mechanism that is a natural mechanism in America, which is tied to money and real estate prices, is not the perfect mechanism for racial solidarity. It's almost accidental. And it works. And I don't want to destroy it as long as it works. But let's face it, long term, it won't matter. Long term, you're going to have plenty of poor white people who can't afford to live in the rich white neighborhood. So where school vouchers come in, and when I find them interesting, what I mean by that is, well, they allow people to withdraw from their state binding, their forced association with the state, because we are all forced to pay these school taxes and these provincial government and federal government taxes, all of this to fund a school system that is basically hostile to us. So I say, if school vouchers are applied and if they allow homeschooling parents to take back the funds from the state, basically what you have is a libertarian opt-out from the funding of other people's educational burden. And that would be very good. That would be very good if you can use it in a way where you center around your family, you raise your children through homeschooling, and you develop networks of parents that are compatible with your lifestyle. So yes, both effects are possible. That's a very good question, because very often I express my enthusiasm about school vouchers, but I fail to underline that certain programs of school voucher are just as bad as socialism in general. But certain programs of school vouchers are actually pulling you away from socialism. Jordan Peterson forgot his password on his computer. Let's see how it went.
Forgotten passwords. Try that. Security question. What was the name of your first pet? Well, I'm not sure I understand the question. That begs the question, what do you mean by name? And what do you mean by pet? A pet is simply something you own, over which you have dominion, you know. By that definition, your body is a pet to your mind. It bends to its will. When you're born with your body and nothing else, and that's bloody hard. How you deal with that? But if you follow that through to its logical conclusion, then my first pet must be my body. Try that. My body. Damn it!
Yeah, that is very good. Very well done. Someone shares this clip from Jordan Peterson. Let's see what it says.
Slates of political candidates before in my life. I thought the panel was incredible and impressive, all things considered. I think all of them made some good points, and they all got in some blows. And
so, was he out of the Republican candidate debate?
Mostly, it was a gracious debate, and it's going to be an extremely interesting political campaign. I've seen worse slates of political candidates.
Yeah, it was an interesting debate. Milwaukee. So I guess that was where the Republican debate was happening. So yeah, what a weird suit, though. But yeah, I agree with Jordan there. It's interesting slate of politicians. Although in the end, None of them are I'm enthusiastic about at this point, except Trump, and Trump wasn't there. One of the best pieces ever published in The Atlantic is this 97-year-old piece by a woman resident in Russia. In it, she described the chaos that resulted when communists destroyed the institution of marriage. Let's read about what happened when Soviets ruined marriage. The Russian effort to abolish marriage. Men took to changing wives with the same zest which they displayed in the consumption of the recently restored 40% vodka. To clear the family out of the accumulated dust of the ages, we had to give it a good shake-up, and we did. Russia boasted it had no illegitimate children. True, they eliminated the illegitimate category. Men took to changing wives, and 300,000 abandoned children resulted. It was not unusual for a boy of 20 to have had 3 or 4 wives, or for a girl of the same age to have had 3 or 4 abortions. I recall another victim of the breakdown of family ties. She was divorced by her husband after their first child was born. He then married another woman, had a child by her, deserted both, and returned to his wife, by whom he had a second child. Not all women suffered from the breakdown. Some exploited it. Women of light behavior would blackmail men into paying alimony. Some men found ways to profit from this as well. They would trick a woman into marriage, use her as an employee on the farm, and then divorce her when the season was through. It wasn't just rural areas that buckled under the effects of marriage dissolution. One group of students became indignant at accusations of licentiousness and declared that having sex was the only real amusement left, so they deserved free abortions. Some chapters of the League of Communist Youth decried people who wouldn't do hookups and even organized circles to encourage free loving. The communists were ideologically committed to the idea that the state should rear the children. This proved too expensive, so this annoying test of communist theories could be given a failing grade. Wow, everything, all of the crap that we see in today's world has been tried before. We're just in a second cycle of it. In fact, we may be in an eternity repeating cycle. It is not the first time that a bunch of people decide that your rights don't matter, that the state is the owner of children, and that they have to be spammed with propaganda that will lead them to live unstable family lives. Everything keeps repeating itself. Unbelievable. This is so blackpilling, because it's like you can't do anything about this. It's just you have to let it run to its course and destruction, suffering, and just people's lives being wasted. Colin Ruggs says, Justin, the Biden Department of Justice, justice in quotation mark, of course, is suing Elon Musk's SpaceX for refusing to hire refugees and asylum seekers. Musk should change his name to Hunter Biden and coerce foreign entities to get rich so the DOJ ignores him. The lawsuit alleges that from at least September 2018 to May 2022, SpaceX routinely discouraged asylees and refugees from applying and refused to hire or consider them because of their citizenship status in violation of the Immigration and Nationality Act. Our investigation found that SpaceX failed to fairly consider or hire asylees and refugees because of their citizenship status and imposed what amounted to a ban on their hire, regardless of their qualifications, in violation of federal law. Man. Yes, new guy says, how many refugees are engineers, though? Yeah, I mean, this is not serious, because this is the Biden political DOJ Department of Justice, who is just punishing political adversaries. It is an enterprise of punishment to Elon Musk for not siding enough with the left, for siding with the Republicans, for starting this whole new media enterprise at Twitter, at X, and to try to compete the normie-controlled, mainstream leftist-controlled media. This is an act of punishment. Because how many companies don't hire these asylees and refugees, especially a company that requires high engineering skills? You're not going to get in these populations people who can fly a rocket. So why would you hire them? Now you're going to say, well, there must be a janitor at SpaceX. Maybe there is, but there's plenty of companies out there who would not hire. So perhaps what they also have are inside testimonies from the Elon Musk team. Because when you operate something big like Elon Musk, you end up having a lot of people who hate you. There are people who may have lost their jobs. There are people who may hate Elon for one reason or another. And then they start making up stories or taking stories that are real, but they bring it against you, not just because the story is real. They bring it against you because they hate you, because they hate the political direction you've taken. So this is just like what they did to Trump. It's annoyance, legal annoyance, that is directed, focused on an enemy of them, of theirs. And meanwhile, we have, of course, talking about legal persecution. Trump arrives in Atlanta to surrender. We have the live CNN shot here. Trump is en route to Georgia jail for historic fourth arrest. Look at this, coming in his SUV bunch. My God, they won't let him leave him alone. That is so annoying, what's happening with the justice system in America. But that is what the left understands well. It's a game of tire your opponent. Always hit them. Doesn't matter if it's just or fair. Just always be on the offensive. And that's what the left does. I think that this is true because I've seen these graphs before. This is absolutely stunning, if it's true. How racial groups rate each other. Now, I don't think that this data comes out in dating. In dating, whites prefer to date whites. But I think that the claim of this graph is that this is how white people are rating other people. So it's a rating. It's not like, would you marry this person? It's more like, how would you rate that person on a thermometer between 0 and 10 of their general value or beauty? And of course, races have their own race preference. But white people somehow are able to collapse their evaluation. They will give the same rating to a beautiful Asian as they do to a beautiful black person and as they do to a beautiful white. And I was pointing out, can you imagine the cognitive load required to be so tight statistically? This means that when white people are evaluating subjectively the value of someone, like, okay, I have to discount for the fact that I'm biased against blacks. Okay, this person isn't super beautiful to me, but for a black person, she's kind of cute. We rescale in our head. That is what white people do to obtain justice. We have this loop of rescaling and of, holy shit, I have to give bonus point for Hispanic here because I don't like Hispanic, but I will judge them as Hispanic, and we end up with mean measurements that are pretty much in the same range, whereas all of the other races have widely varied estimations of others based on their race. I'm stunned. I'm surprised that the data doesn't show the little lines on the side. Is it because this data has been played with, or is it because the whites vary so little that they basically rate everyone at 7 out of 10 on average, and they have much less standard deviation? I don't know if we're getting fooled, but there were people answering to that tweet, and it seems that it's a serious graph, at least from what I could gather. Let's talk about the debate of yesterday. Trump is still ahead in the survey. The debate doesn't seem to have created much of an effect, except that Ramaswamy is continuing on his on his streak of increases. He was starting as one of the very lowest choices among the panel, and he has escalated the surveys from April, going eventually to beat Mike Pence, and he is now in a tie against DeSantis. And I wouldn't be surprised that after the debate that we've seen, is even going to be above DeSantis. DeSantis has not been doing a particularly interesting performance. He came out trying to focus on his theme of, hey, let's make policy that is right-wing. Let's make policy that is winning the social conservative war. But it didn't feel super emotional. It didn't feel passionate. It didn't feel like an enthusiastic project. He basically was saying we have to attack the deep state and destroy it, which I fully agree. And I'm very pleased by this message. But he was saying it in such a bureaucratic way that emotionally, at the emotional level, Ron DeSantis was not compelling. It was like, well, here's a bureaucrat wanting to fire other bureaucrats. Whereas Ramaswamy was giving this energy of coming from outside of politics. It didn't seem with Ramaswamy that we were taking someone who's kind of tame or drab, like a bureaucrat or a government person. We were really taking someone from outside, a little bit the way we took Trump in 2016. But anyways, all of this fight that has happened on Fox News is between the people who are at the lowest. And it's amazing when you see the trajectory of DeSantis. DeSantis simply had he started very good, and then he had terrible campaign all the way. He just doesn't catch the human attention enough. It's not enough what he's doing. It's not passionate enough. Rodita Sid says Vivek is the only other candidate who does not attack Trump. He's the clear choice for vice president. He has replaced DeSantis in everything, including fucking his wife. I wasn't aware about this wife claim. Interesting. Interesting. Now, let's have a look at some of the clips. Dr. Ricardo Duchesne was saying the mental castration of white male conservatives has given Vivek a great opportunity to stand above them in courage and truthfulness. That is absolutely correct. Basically, we had this guy proposing daring political programs, daring ideas, and yet we had the others, basically like Mike Pence at some point said, it's not time for a kid, basically. It's not time for a kid. We need someone with experience. And it doesn't... It's like this doesn't feel correct. It doesn't seem like we gain anything from the experience of Mike Pence. The experience of Mike Pence doesn't sound like to me it is something to be trusted that I would benefit from. In fact, if anything, in a world that hates politicians, and that's the world we are in currently, to be part of the club is not a bragging right.
Mr. Ramaswamy, you would not support an increase of funding to Ukraine.
I would not. And I think that this is disastrous.
That was so refreshing to hear it in front of all the warmongers, even DeSantis. No matter what he says, you know, he was talking military and talking about his role as a military person all night. And here we had one guy who was able to stand and say, no, we will withdraw our funding from Ukraine.
That we are protecting against an invasion across somebody else's border when we should use those same military resources to prevent across the invasion of our own southern border here in the United States of America.
Now, that is fascinating to hear in a crew of all white people to need an Indian to have a positioning on the stage that is the only really racial kind of claim of that night. That is fascinating. It's worrying in a way. It means that we're so cocked that we're exporting our political courage to fucking India. I mean, this is how bad things are. If only you knew how bad things are. But that is it. That is the only kind of identitarian claim made, which is there is an invasion at our southern border. Now, he's correct. But why do we need an Indian to come tell us that? How is it that we can't have a white person say this in America?
We are driving Russia further into China's hands. The Russia-China alliance is the single greatest threat we face. And I find it offensive that we have professional politicians on the stage that will make a pilgrimage to Kyiv, to their Pope, Zelensky, without...
Now, all night long, there was a strong undercurrent of racial commentary. When Chris Christie said that Ramaswamy sounds like ChatGPT, to me, that evoked, you know, the idea of a customer service Indian guy, a kind of machine-like Turk, if you will, a robot of production of stuff. The way there is this view of Indian people in America sometimes that they are kind of serving as a machine, as an AI. They will respond whatever they have to according to the plan on their screen, but they don't really think. That was kind of the underlying statement of the ChatGPT comment. And here we have an underlying attack against Christianity in a way, using Christianity, which should be, you know, normally you expect in the Republican Party debate that they would just all be Christians, you know, and abide by God and in God we trust. But here we have an Indian guy saying that these people, they don't truly follow Jesus Christ. They're Christians maybe by label, by denomination, by the name of the church they go to, but their true Pope is Zelensky, and Zelensky is a Jew. The racial undertones and the commentary, this is extremely rich. To see this kind of commentary, to me, that was interesting. It was interesting to see them be called out on a form of hypocrisy, which is you're just Christians by display, but you are your true Pope is not the Catholic Pope. You have another Pope, and it is Zelensky.
Doing the same thing for people in Maui or the south side of Chicago, okay. Right, or Kensington. I think that we have to put the interests of Americans first.
He was
secure our own border instead of somebody else's.
He was referring.
And the reality is, this is also how we project strength by making America strong at home.
All right. So basically, a border wall discourse. The kind of that you would normally expect from a Trump, here being carried by Ramaswamy, which makes me think, and a lot of people have speculated, is Ramaswamy, could he be an interesting runner with Trump? I think he would definitely be very interesting. I'm not saying that I would be super enthusiastic to the point that I was in 2016. But I think that Trump plus Ramaswamy would be a beautiful team. Republican debate highlights, five memorable moments from Milwaukee slugfest. You know, we need to send Joe Biden back to his basement. Nothing that DeSantis was saying that night really caught. It wasn't strong. And here that there was the moment where Mike Pence says we don't need to bring in a rookie. That didn't feel very convincing. It's like, is it all you got that you're part of the people who put us in this shit that we're currently in? Is it all you got that you're part of the Washington, D.C. club? Because that's a deal breaker for me, Mike Pence. That wasn't a convincing attack. Now, I know that there's always a part of the population that will be responsive to an experience-based argument, but it wasn't super solid, especially in the face of the fact that clearly Ramaswamy was the most skilled speaker on that stage. Consensus versus leadership, you know, a loose discussion between Nikki Haley and Pence on, well, should we seek consensus on abortion or should we, like, someone was pointing out in the media analysis of this, there's no such thing as a consensus on abortion. And that is true. And I think that's what Mike Pence was saying. You know, there's no consensus because, anyways, we are outside of the consensus era. The supposed consensus was Roe v. Wade. And Roe v. Wade is over. So the Supreme Court has explicitly, basically made it such that there is no more consensus. It is now a decision of the states, and there will be a landscape of different attitudes toward abortion in America. So the time for consensus is gone. The climate change agenda is a hoax. This is the kind of statement that made Ramaswamy, you know, steal the show. Of course, as I pointed out earlier, there's a difference between saying climate change is a hoax and the climate change agenda is a hoax, because this leaves you an out. You can say this sentence right here while still believing that the globe is getting warmer. And in fact, you can even believe that it's getting warmer because of humans. But when you say the climate change agenda is a hoax, what it means is the politics that are built around the climate change fact are deceptive. In other words, people are using a true physical fact of planet Earth, but they're using it for hidden political purposes, such as abolishing private property and liberty. That is the clever phrasing that will allow, ultimately, Ramaswamy to still be able to stand to scrutiny in a leftist interview or leftist debate where they would try to call him out on this. Anomaly was saying, I don't buy Ramaswamy's shtick at all. Watch this video and you can see why. Yeah, this video does bring some worrying things that he has said in the past.
So first, let me just address a question that is on everybody's mind at home tonight. Who the heck is this skinny guy with a funny last name, and what the heck is he doing in the middle of this debate stage?
Again, you know, skinny guy. Skinny guy is not what anyone was thinking. What is an Indian doing? That was the question. And he brings it in a side way, like, oh, well, a weird last name. But, you know, I wish that we were more direct with questions of race. It's not the fact that you're skinny. It's not even your weird last name. It's the fact that you're Indian. Why don't you just say it? You're wondering, what is an Indian guy doing at the Republican Party? Let's be honest.
I'll tell you, I'm not a politician.
Of a mill worker's son who dares to defy the odds. The hope of a skinny kid with a funny name who believes that America has a place for him too.
Wow. So that was taken from Barack Obama. that was taken from Barack Obama. Those are, I mean, is it plagiarism? It's at the border of it. But even Chris Christie will call out this kind of semi-plagiarism right live. Chris Christie, after this segment, came to Ramaswamy and said, the last person who said these words is Obama. So Chris Christie had the presence of mind to remember that those were words from Obama. Or perhaps he had a little person helping him in the ear. Very interesting. And yes, is it not interesting, Firestarter, that it is the gigantic Chris Christie who was remembering the skinny remark of Barack Obama? Is it because the fatphobic aspect of the skinny remark may have been particularly emotionally triggering for Chris Christie, thereby kind of amplifying his ability to memorize it and to for it to have emotional salience? That is an it's interesting that it's Chris Christie who ended up pointing out that what Ramaswamy said about being a skinny guy with a weird last name came from Obama.
So who is Vivek Ramaswamy?
The Obama plagiarizing Big Pharma CEO.
Who wrote a book less than a year ago in which he compared Trump to sore loser Stacey Abrams, said he respects Pence, and says that Mike Pence did the right thing on January 6th. A man who tweeted out, well said, George Soros, and seemingly even parroted his rhetoric.
Well, he said, well said, George Soros, when George Soros said, I consider Mr. Xi the most dangerous enemy of open societies in the world. So I guess it was some kind of libertarian agreement with George Soros. But yeah, kind of weird. I don't like to consider China, you know, the enemy. Certainly not the enemy of open societies, knowing what it means in the mouth of George Soros. Because George Soros open societies is the societies where they fortify elections. It's the societies where BLM ruins your cities. Those are the open societies of George Soros. But it's hard to say from this tweet alone, was Vivek Ramaswamy just edgily kind of saying, oh yeah, I do espouse this word by George Soros? Or was this actually supporting George Soros as a man?
Rhetoric on open societies.
A man who took money for his law school from a Soros fellowship said he did it in a video defending himself, quote, when I...
Oh, and he got a Soros fellowship.
I didn't have the money.
When I didn't have the money and it was a merit scholarship.
Yet Fox News reported that he made millions of dollars that year and $1 million every year for a couple years prior. So he lied about that.
So it took a George Soros award in a year where he was making $2 million already. Well, when you take an award, when it's from George Soros, the problem is that it comes with a sort of political command. Like, you are the servant of George Soros. Although he will never tell you what to do in words, but he's using this very award to try to reward the people who take the directions that he wants you to take. So it is a problem. But at the same time, you know, in the same way, I took an award from Jeff Epstein. But you know, I can talk to you and explain to you today that even as I was taking it, it was kind of a subversive move of mine that I was like, okay, let's take money from Jeff Epstein. So you can take an award while also being disagreeing with the person who awards it to you.
A man who made a fortune off of a failed Alzheimer's drug, and a man who just last year...
Okay, so that's in reference to his pharma work, only to see the Alzheimer's drug at its center fail 2 years later and the company's value tank. Okay, so they were developing a drug, didn't turn out.
Failed Alzheimer's drug. And a man who just last year wrote a Wall Street Journal op-ed in which he said, "The most important step in fighting the COVID-19 pandemic was the distribution of vaccines." That's
okay, worrying pro-vaccine positioning. Wow, this guy makes a convincing video that I don't know that I should explicitly side with Ramaswamy. I love his enthusiasm. I love a lot of stuff that he says about the border, but perhaps he's not the right guy. Perhaps he's too much of a normie, too much of an automaton.
That's in 2022. So who is Big Pharma salesman Vivek? Well, he's whoever you want him to be, because just like Obama, he'll say whatever he has to say, even copying Obama, to tell the naive and foolish sheeple what they want to hear. Everyone's giving this guy softball interviews and weak debates. Vivek, if you want a real challenge, come on my channel. I don't...
A new guy says, "I trust this guy. He has a Bob Ross shirt." Yes, generally, this shirt is associated with poverty and reliability, definitely a good sign. Cloud Warmer says, "We live in a timeline where two first-generation Indians are arguing about limiting immigration into a majority white Christian nation." Yes, those are weird times. Definitely that is weird. Cloud Warmer says, "JF, the Tucker/Trump interview count, last I looked, is at 240 million. Yes, those, as many people point out, those are impressions, not views, but it's a big number. It must mean a big number of views also. And he says, "Meanwhile, articles say that Fox gathered 12 million for the debate. The days of the mainstream are well and truly over." Yes, so yesterday I actually watched the debate first. Because I found that I actually, when there was a moment of pause on the debate, I was switching to the interview. But I was finding that the interview style with Donald Trump was very laid back, and I felt more compelled to the live moment that Fox News was presenting. So, live is important to me. Live is very important, and it's amazing because I was actually more excited about perhaps the Tucker, you know, domination of Fox News than I was about the Republican debate itself. But I ended up watching mostly the Republican debate first because it was live, because it's important to me that things are live. To me, it's attached to transparency, to an inability. You know, with a live, you can't fake certain things. You have to perform. You have to be there. There was a moment at the very end where Ron DeSantis was called for his conclusion, and there was a long silence. He was like, and then he starts like a robot. That wasn't good. Ron DeSantis, let me tell you, on that night, there are moments where it's not been looking good. Like people, I will grant that this is a Zoom and most people will not have noticed, but look at what people have clipped out. This is a weird moment at the very end, I think, of his speech.
"And I will not let you down. And I will not let you down. And I will not let you down. And I will not let you down."
Oh my God, how do you even do this intentionally? "And I will not let you down." "And I will not let you down." What the fuck?
"And I will not let you down. And I will not let you down. And I will not let you..."
People say not a big deal, but a lot of people felt there's something weird. Ron DeSantis was not feeling well that night. He was not delivering in a totally spontaneous and natural way. It was like at 90% there. He was not totally there. Cloud Warmer says, lol, JF, that clip is the epitome. If only you knew how bad things really are. Look at his eyes. Yes, you know, what I suspect is that this was very tiring. It must be an exhausting thing. And I think that, of course, these guys, they get training. They get lots of people around them all day to prep them and everything. And I think that he was arriving at the finish line and he was just feeling a relief. But that relief showed up in an awkward way.
And I will not let you down.
It was like, okay, I'm done for today. Yeah, I'm going to give you that smile, but I'm done. I'm going to sleep.
And I will not let you down. And I will not let...
All right. Well, you know, it's not dramatic, but it's taken with everything. People have a very creepy experience of Ron DeSantis. And yeah, my heart was with him at the beginning of all this, but too militaristic, showed up to be too pro-Ukraine, too much with the machine of the warmongering, and I ended up disconnecting from him. 200 million and counting, Trump triumphant, Ramaswamy runner-up, DeSantis dud. Yeah, so as you were pointing out, very big view count and impression count on the Tucker Carlson interview. A very good interview. You know, I was saying that I didn't expect much intellectually, but Tucker has some sort of talent at getting Trump to the right places, so that Trump was saying relatively new stuff. Of course, it's always... and. You can't make a campaign just on this, just on the past, and on, oh yeah, they're going after me. Oh yeah, this person, yeah, very good. I call her this, and yeah, she's very good. It's like you can't just be the godfather of America, and oh yeah, this person was very loyal. It's not enough, but it's pretty much what we got. And we got Trump's perspective, some of it including, you know, on Jeffrey Epstein. And yeah, do you think he killed himself or not? And it was interesting to see a kind of conspiratorial Tucker come in and say, hey, it was your attorney general who has lied, because he would have lied about the circumstances or something, and he would have been caught doing that lie, you know, William Barr. And for Tucker, this is the smoke coming out of the fire. This is the proof that there must be something that was dirty here in the death of Jeff Epstein. Richard Spencer has commented on the debate. Vivek Ramaswamy won last night's debate for the simple reason that he was the center of attention and the one receiving the most attacks. In fact, he was as relevant as Donald Trump in this regard. Yes, Christie was right. Vivek is basically a boomer con GPT, AI simulation. But that's what goofy Republican voters want. DeSantis' performance was uninspired, and at this point, he wasn't even worth attacking. Why bother launching torpedoes at a sinking ship? Christie is the only one who has a distinct lane, being anti-Trump. That said, the hesitant raising of his hand on the question of supporting a convicted felon was a bad look. Yes, he signed a stupid GOP pledge to back the nominee, but the alpha move would have been to say, Biden isn't all that bad, I refuse to vote for Trump. Overall, attacking Biden is a useless tactic, unless you're Trump. The orange man is running away with the nomination, thus focusing on Biden as some sort of radical communist that must be stopped at all costs, simply plays into Trump's hands. The same goes for denouncing the weaponization of government against conservatives. Trump's the one who's been indicted, thus Trump winning would be the best way to stick it to the bastards. As I've said before, Ron the sociopath is such an off-putting, creepy individual that he isn't able to win a national election. That said, his strategy was doomed from the beginning and at this point cannot be reversed. He's effectively spent millions boosting Trump, It's safe to say that everyone involved in his organization is a risible moron. Secure the future of our people. You've been sharing links to the tweets of the show of the night and the gab of the show of the night. It's okay that you do this once a show, but please don't spam with fire and links on this chat. It's like, yeah, people who are here, they already know about my Twitter. They already know about the show. So they don't need you to give them a link. Now, it's okay to give it once, to remind people to share it. But last show, I was annoyed because I think you did it 4 or 5 times. And I was kind of, it's taking my attention. And I want to be able to engage with the chat in a human way. I want to see what everyone says. And when I see your fire just fire up my chat, it's hard cognitively. Cloud Warmer sends a super chat. He says, Jeff, it is 8 years later since 2015 when we had high energy Trump. Also, he has a record in office now. He can't just come in and say whatever the fuck he likes, owning people without scrutiny himself. There was a lot of shit he didn't do. Yeah, exactly, which is why I'm not totally enthusiastic about Trump. I'm not super hopeful that a Trump presidency would fix America. In fact, in a way, we know it won't, because Trump has already been there. So I'm supporting Trump in the sense that he's getting persecuted, so why not make a little martyr type of move here? And he's a way to not get the Democrats in power for 4 years. But that's pretty much it. I don't expect Trump's presidency to be fantastic. Cloud Warmer says, Jeff, you could definitely agree that Chris Christie was ready to eat his competition. Definitely, that is something that could be said. Is this statement true? If you want something said, ask a man. If you want something done, ask a woman. When that moment happened in the debate, I was listening to it. And I was like, womp, womp. What? I can understand the whole woman power mood of the normie viewers. But I've never seen women do amazing things. Like it's like, oh yeah. Who in America thinks in their head, if I want something done, I have to put a woman in charge? No one seriously believes this. Everyone knows there are serious problems with the ability of women to deliver on things of a certain complexity. You know, if you're getting above dishwasher, washing machine levels of accomplishment into the higher level, like cognitive performance, like putting a woman in charge of programming, for example, programming the interface between Twitter and your browser, you're not going to get anything. So this whole idea that you can ask a woman if you really need to get something done, I don't experience the world that way. I don't think many people do. So it was one of these moments. It's like, oh yeah, everyone is forced to act like normies who do like women. But everyone knows that this is not true, what has just been said. Highlights from the Republican presidential debate. If former President Trump is convicted in a court of law, would you still support him as your party's choice?
Georgia at the Fulton County Jail for charges relating to the 2020 election loss.
You all signed a pledge to support the eventual Republican nominee. If former President Trump is convicted in a court of law, would you still support him as your party's choice? Please raise your hand if you would.
You know, Richard Spencer is absolutely right in his analysis. What was that? not sure. Do we want this to be the hand of the American government in the world. It's like, depends. Does it come with free burgers? I don't know. And now he's doing this this whole I'm a strong, independent black woman type of move. I mean, yeah, Strace Channel says that was female cognition. That is a very female move. I am a strong black woman. You shouldn't be asking this question. I mean, let's review this. What a bad performance by Chris Christie. And see, Ramaswamy understands. He understands that there is an image here. He doesn't care that other people have raised their hands. He knows that they're not loyal enough to Trump that they would proudly raise their hand. And this is the beauty of understanding body language. And perhaps that he got this from his theater courses. He understands that this is a demonstration of strong solidarity with Trump. Like, I'm not just raising my hand because I did sign that pledge. And so technically, if Trump was a criminal, but he did get the nomination, I would have to stand by it. It's like, no, I'm proud to stand by Trump. That's the kind of solidity that we want as a president. That is beautiful to have. And it's good thinking of him to have thought while on the stage, I have to keep my hand up longer than others, because all that matters is the pictorial expression at the end. And what that pictorial expression tells me is there is one person loyal to Trump on this stage, and it's Ramaswamy.
Christie, you were kind of late to the game there, but you raised your hand.
No, I'm doing this. Look. Look, I'm doing this.
I know you didn't.
I mean, it's impossible to understand what's going on here. We have Sneeko was impressed at the Ramaswamy performance.
The climate change agenda is a hoax. The climate change agenda is a hoax. And the reality is, the anti-carbon agenda is the wet blanket on our economy.
I don't know that this is totally like, mind-blowing the way Sneeko does it, I guess. You do have to do these react videos, and it's the trend, and you need to do it to meme on the internet. Kind of okay, good. And there was a racial reference to the fact that we're all the same, kind of in a semi-based way.
All of the ways we are really just the same as Americans, bound nice. By a common set of ideals nice. That set this nation into motion in 1776.
So that was a way to take the classical Democrat talking point of we're all the same and to kind of veer it against them. But it's also deeply the Democrats succeeding at pulling the Republicans toward the center. Because, he does say something about the American 1776, American history, that kind of stuff. But in the end, he's saying we're all the same, and that is a civic nationalist perspective on America. That is saying we are bound, that the Constitution is so strong that it can bound together people who biologically weren't the same, but we end up being the same under this law, under God.
Yes.
And this is our moment to revive those common ideals.
Yes.
God is real.
Yes.
There are two genders.
Yes.
Fossil fuels are a requirement for human prosperity.
What?
Reverse racism is racism.
Yes.
An open border is not a border.
Whoa!
Parents determine the education of their children.
Yeah, this was a very good ending by Ramaswamy. Very good performance. Yes, those things needed to be said. And it's amazing that 90% of these things are not shared by everyone that was on stage. Those should all be given for a Republican Party nominee. All right. So that was it for what I had to say about the debate. In conclusion, we had a very good showdown between Tucker on Twitter, Tucker on X, and Fox News. In the end, there was interesting stuff to be heard on both sides. There was a calm aspect to the Trump interview that I appreciated. But at the same time, at an emotional level, I felt that things that were happening, they were happening on Fox News. Whereas the Trump interview was something I could watch later. That's the feeling that it gave me, the fact that it wasn't live. But not everyone is as dependent on live as me. You know, it's my life to be live, and I appreciate when I watch something live. It gives me this feeling of participating to the event the way I wasn't feeling that way when I was watching Trump. But all in all, interesting that the Republican Party is at this stage where we can say that Ron DeSantis has underperformed in this campaign, and someone is rising as a dragger of attention, and definitely someone to consider as vice president running mate for Trump. Spindly Opinion says, same, JF. As Wagner fighters threaten new march on Moscow, Putin says Prigozhin was talented man who made mistakes. Oh man, this is so cruel. The Russian way of signaling, I killed this guy. It's like he was a talented man. He made some mistakes along the way. I love this Russian aspect. I don't think that there's many other culture where veiled threats and underlying layers of language, like people were pulling this interview where Putin says, yeah, I can forgive. And then the interviewer asks him, are there things you can't forgive? And he immediately says, betrayal. I can't forgive betrayal. And that is what Prigozhin had been doing. He had been betraying Putin, and now his plane has exploded in the sky of Moscow. Lendal Guntram says, Putin has 100% solid alibi. He was at a commemorative World War II concert. I think that at the level of Putin, you don't need alibi. That is the level, that is a very luxurious level. When you're Putin, you can afford not having an alibi. There's not going to be a police who comes to interrogate you. I don't think that there's such a thing as a need for an alibi. I don't know what's the position in the regular Russian population. Maybe someone is Russian on the chat and could inform us about this. How do regular Russian people think of this whole death? Do they say, oh, it must be Putin? Or are they so intimidated that they wouldn't want trouble, that they wouldn't want to talk about it? How do Russians approach the corruption of their own government? I'd love to know this. Rodin Asid says, but JF Prigozhin was already dead in 2019 and faked his death back then. Okay, well, that's Elvis Presley levels of conspiracy theory, like Elvis is still alive in Wonderland, or is that how it's called, Wonderland? Elon Musk said that X, the platform formerly known as Twitter, would sue organizations funded by financier George Soros that allegedly pushed for a crackdown on free speech. Mr. Musk, who bought Twitter last year in a pledge to make the platform a bastion of free speech, said that he agrees with the view expressed by investigative journalist Schellenberger that NGOs have been falsely claiming that hate incidents are on the rise in order to push restrictions of free expression. He might have a case for defamation. He might have a case if he can prove that this has been done in a malicious way, but it's very hard to sue an organization. You're going to have to demonstrate not only that their incidents that they point to are too little. If they are there, they have the right to point to it. That's the thing with free speech. It's like, even if there's one incident of hate on Twitter, they would have the right to point it and say, see, there's hate. This is supported by Elon Musk. So I don't know if he's going to win, but it's good that he's on that path of claiming a space for free speech. David Levitt contradictions. In 2022, he was saying the only person who should have control over your personal medical decisions is you, not politicians, you. Hashtag bans off our bodies. Hashtag Roe v. Wade. And yet in 2021, he was saying enough is enough. Make vaccines mandatory. It must be so terrible to have it as a job to hold these contradicting beliefs in your head. Rainier was saying to me on Twitter, talking about the SBF, Sam Bankman-Fried. He was saying, in my own case, in my own judiciary case, the court ordered a BTC transfer from the ex-wife. The court thinks that if they order a transfer, it gets done, but it didn't. I've been in this battle since 2019. You should never give bitcoins to your wife. You should never have her hold the keys. Bitcoin is yours if you keep the keys. There are times where your wife is trusted, and in which case it is okay to share the location of your keys, so that if you die, your wife is the one taking them. But in the case where a wife is not trusted, and it should be most cases these days, because they are 80% the initiator of divorces, so basically you have more chance of winning a coin flip than your wife being trustable. That is the point at which we've reached. So you can still trust people of your family. Very often, your own parents or your brothers and sisters will be more loyal to you than your wife. Your children will often be more loyal than your wife. You don't want them to have access to the keys. If you choose your wife as the guardian of your Bitcoin in case you die, make sure you put these keys in an envelope that you have to open the envelope and you have to break the sticker to check the key. That way they can know the location of the keys, but you can know if they've looked into it. And that is my counsel regarding Bitcoin and wives. But yeah, a judge saying to the wife, you have to transfer his BTC back to him, that won't happen, or it will happen if she wants. You really can't make this shit up. Last news item before we close the show. He needs to shape up. Keanu Reeves blasted for chubby body while spending family day on boat. So this is the standard that we hold Keanu Reeves to. That is a fat Keanu Reeves. But that is how a plus-size singer, Lizzo, teaches us a huge self-love despite all trolls and the naysayers. This is a hero. This is a fat person. I mean, it's unbelievable, the double standards. What else did we have before we close the show? Oh yeah, but I mean, married NYC teacher who once posted about helping kids understand consent charged with raping a 14-year-old student. Oh yeah, these weird liberal women who are obsessed about consent. Very often they're just sick, pro sex with children kind of witches. Just be careful. Bye bye. Oh, I had forgotten to check Entropy, but we had a donation on Entropy. AI says, hey, Jeff, what would you say are your top 5 streams this year that we ought to watch? Streams. I don't watch streams. I produce streams. Do you mean streams like streaming a movie? I would say Nefarious. The movie Nefarious is better than average. Super acceptable. I'll have to come back to you on this. Other than this year, specifically from this year, I don't know if the Westworld season 2 is, as yet. Westworld, not Westworld, I mean The Peripheral. The Peripheral was very interesting, first season. I don't know if they've come back for another season yet. It kind of became bad with time. The episodes were getting worse and worse. No, it doesn't seem like they came back. Well. Yeah, I'll say watch Nefarious and then I'll come back to you on other things, but from this year I don't remember other names that struck me as good. Donald Trump's mugshot is out. Wow. Okay, he meant my best live streams. Well, my live streams, there were some interesting moments. The Normie Squeeze is among the recent ones. Perhaps the Totlarity, Judgment Day, and the Simpocalypse. My review of Barbie was definitely one of the best. Sourced in randomness, if you'd like to hear about biology, that was very good. What the Matrix is Made Of, my message to Andrew Tate's brother, and the Ted K interview with Ryan Dawson, that was good. Yeah. The ones I just listed are, I believe, my best of the last 2 months. Then, if you want the relationship between Elon Musk and his father, to understand Elon, you must understand Erol. That was my research on Elon Musk's father. Yeah. What else do we have? Letter to Human on Gene Editing in video form. If you'd like to hear me read my letter, which I've published on the blockchain. So yeah, I think I've given you 5 or 6 choices right there that are some of the best from the last few months. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.